Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we're talking about the future of compliance, and we are joined by founder and CEO of CBD Global, Scott Holden. Scott, thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me on the call.
It's a pleasure to have you on, and if you would, tell us how CBD Global has done, how it's gotten through the last couple of months, if you will, since this pandemic really began to spread.
The past couple of months. It's interesting for a lot of companies in our space. The state, and I know all states are handling it differently, but they went through a period of trying to decide whether they were going to allow a lot of us to stay open. The THC side's obviously managed somewhat differently from dispensaries and all from the hemp industry and the CBD industry. CBD companies are really labeled as food manufacturers. So falling under that category was kind of a loophole for a lot of us to continue to keep our doors open. And we naturally did just that and continued to conduct businesses normally. A lot of our staff started working from home. So I'm very comfortable admitting that there were a few things that were difficult to manage with not as many bodies around, phone calls, helping the back of the house operations, being understaffed, and just trying to be sensitive to a lot of the individual employees' takes and feelings on everything and having to handle each of those individually. So it was a process. It still is. We're still going through the process of getting people back to work. But we never shut down as a company. And so we were able to stay open from the beginning. It was interesting to see the state, though, on the THC side, say that, I forget exactly what the date was, but they announced on the news they were going to close at a particular time at 6 p.m. And then everyone hoarded to the streets and there were lines 2 blocks long. And they realized this was having a counterproductive effect to social distancing. So they retracted that. But that was more humorous than anything else. But otherwise, for the most part, COVID has not affected us too much other than what's naturally happening industry-wide. Everything's slowing down a bit, but it started to pick back up about a month ago.
Well, the issue of compliance is so important because it is going to be a major driver in moving this industry forward and really penetrating the larger market, the box stores, the national distribution outlets. There's such a need for compliance beyond, I think, what you call self-regulation. And we see that a lot in the form of COAs. So, Scott, if you would, obviously compliance can mean a lot of different things in a lot of different contexts. But as far as where the industry is at right now and where it's going, just give us a high-level overview of compliance from your perspective.
Yeah, I mean, I'll tell you how we've seen it over the years and what we have seen evolved over time and where we think it's going. Like you said, context means everything. The word is somewhat of a buzzword. It gets thrown around a lot, and it means very different things to different people and different companies. Compliance, are we talking FDA compliance, packaging and labeling, manufacturing, health department compliance, there's state-specific compliance, federal compliance, and the rules change from geography to geography, which is an extreme challenge for people. Most THC companies are confined to their state, really. But the hemp space, we move nationally and even internationally. So we have to manage changing compliance from so many different places, not just so many to keep track of, but they're all changing. And a lot of folks, started off in the same manner where they had to in this space where, like you said, self-regulation, what does that mean? What does it look like? Because there really is no third party of independent verifiers that exists right now to that is kind of the sole oversight to manage people, to guide them, to hold their hand through the stepping stones of compliance. And so people have had to define it naturally for themselves. And state regulators had to step in and decide what they thought needed to be done. And then the advisors that they have God knows who those people are and where they're coming from. A lot of us scratch our head in opposite end wondering with some of the rules that come out. But, you know, as you mentioned, you know, COAs tend to be what people are referring to a lot of the time. In our point of view, we don't see COAs as compliance at all. Those are a QAQC document. It's very interesting to see this industry and how it's evolved into a space where, and it's understandably so because there's no real center of regulatory environment like you have with a lot of foods and drugs. You know, most consumers will look at food and drug and say, well, somebody's managing that. You know, it's the FDA. They've got that handle. Well, we're in limbo land, right? So we're not a drug yet, and nobody has had a grass application approved yet, generally recognized as safe. So it's also no one has had a new dietary ingredient application accepted for any of these cannabinoids. So it's not a supplement. So we really are in limbo land. And that means that it's understandable that you would require things out of the ordinary, but it's potentially open a Pandora's box in our opinion, because we provide in the context of where's the industry going, you know, big box stores are kind of the next step. All of them has taken sample products from companies in a real preliminary fashion, around the topicals arena, because that's not an ingestible and that's what was safe in the eyes of the FDA to start with. But the issue that we see is what is going to be the actual mechanism to open up for ingestibles. And what we've been hearing from our networks and inside connections is a lot of the brands out there, they knew were just kind of test beds, and they're going to have a completely different evaluation process. We hope they do, because we've been viewing things very differently than the market at large. And you know, a COA is the bare minimum. It's really showing and even if you do a full panel of a potency to show that your levels of cannabinoids and terpenes are what you say they are and what you're marketing in the product, that's really a quality document, to a transparency document. But then,
just to keep yourself on target too, right? Just to realize that you're producing a consistent quality product, which seems to be something that the industry is waiting to be imposed upon it. But isn't that the darn bare minimum of creating a product for a marketplace? Scott, everything you've said just gets my mind going, and there's so many different things we could talk about. So I'm going to try to stay focused and sort of enter this through where you started, which was the food manufacturing piece, all right? So if you look at cannabinoids that come off of the industrial hemp plant, or ultimately synthetic, synthesized, other plant-derived cannabinoids that enter into this marketplace, they're really just ingredients. They're not necessarily featured products. You don't see taurine taurine's not on the shelves of stores.
Exactly right.
It's an ingredient in Red Bull and other products like that, for example. Although this is much different because it comes from cannabis and it's more exciting and et cetera, et cetera. But coming at it from a food manufacturing perspective, right? In Colorado, we lobbied and wrote something called the Hemp Foods Bill. But it was done as a policy several years ago. Then a couple of years ago, it was adopted as law by our legislature, giving the industry the designation, because the designation of being a food or supplement provider, manufacturer, following the same existing health and safety standards for any food product. Yet so many in the industry want to seemingly reinvent the wheel and say, we need special things. Tell us a little bit about the food manufacturing approach of regulation and what that does. Because Colorado was the very first state to do that in the absence of specific FDA oversight, and other states have followed suit with the exact same language. So maybe you could start there and just break this down so our listeners understand what compliance really does mean. Because I'd venture a guess 60% of the CBD manufacturers out there, in Colorado even, don't have a food manufacturing registration with the CDPHE or any other state that they operate in. They're just doing things in the absence of regulation that aren't necessarily business friendly.
And that's scary, and it is a high likelihood that that's true. And that really is a bare minimum. Having, if we're talking about the regulatory department in Colorado, the CDPHE, Department of Public Health and Environment, you must have that licensing in order to operate, or you're really kind of an R&D department. You shouldn't be selling anything for human consumption. And that's the bare minimum. You know, you can get licensing, and people talk about GMP all the time. And that's really where COAs come to play, as you just mentioned. This is an internal self-regulatory mechanism for quality assurance. And, you know, we see outside people are asking this for finished products. It's weird because you don't get that for any other consumer good that you go to. And most of the consumers don't even know how to read these documents. But for the compliance that you have to have, you must have a food manufacturing license. The next stage would obviously be getting a supplement manufacturing license. And that has nothing to do with the designation of the materials yet. But you could have the quality control environment of a supplement manufacturer. And all of that is pretty much the furthest that a company would go in our space. And I say that because the next step up is either going to be OTC, over-the-counter drug application status, or scheduled controlled substance licenses. And anytime that you go OTC or for controlled substances, the federal FDA must come and audit your building. And any cannabis company, regardless of what side you're on, inviting the Fed, who has instilled in a seat of undecidedness of how they feel about all of this, it's a real risky proposition to invite them into your door, because they could have all kinds of ideas of what they want to do with you at that point.
Although, one second on that, just to comment, because that's an interesting point. Most people don't know that our state FDA equivalents in most states around the country are heavily funded by the FDA. So in other words, the same person that it might inspect your facility for the state puts on a different hat at oftentimes and wears the FDA hat. So maybe that works in favor of those folks that are approved in the state.
That's an excellent point, because the auditor that did our GMP and licensing was that person. He had all those badges, and we even talked and joked about the fact that he could leave the door, go change his Superman outfit, and come back in with a new badge and do an entirely different kind of audit on us. And that does exist. And, you know, these are things that you have to do from a manufacturing standpoint. And then there's compliance as far as the industry goes. And the thing that we don't see anybody talking about is what we think is really going to be required to break out of your state across state lines, which is when the FDA comes in, right? When a product crosses state lines, that's when their jurisdiction comes into play. And to break into box stores who right now, if you're providing a certificate of analysis for a finished product, a COA says nothing about the legality of the raw materials used to manufacture that product, as you were referring to earlier, just raw materials, and not showing what we call chain of custody, you know, real raw material pedigree from the seed all the way to the sale. And there's a whole slew of documents, depending on what location you're in, geography, country, that you would have to have in order to show that legitimacy of legality to show based on the jurisdictions that apply to you is something that I would venture to guess maybe less than 5 to 3% of the companies in the industry have put together.
Let's dig into that for just a second, because it doesn't seem extremely difficult to produce a chain of custody. So just hearken a guess for us. Why do you think companies are reluctant or haven't yet really taken seriously the chain of custody aspect?
Well, probably because they don't know, or they don't want to tell, because it came from sources, at least in previous years. But things are getting better. Scott, what's your take on that?
No, agreed completely. And so those are all valid points, in my opinion. So one, people just don't know. It's not what they focused on. Two, it has to do with the industry's business models and how they're evolving over time. When the industry started, you know, very few people could jump into vertical integration out of the gate. And so most people had to decide, are you in the retail product side? Are you a marketing company? Do you have a source supplier that's manufacturing for you and gathering your raw ingredients? Even if you're a manufacturer and you're sourcing those ingredients, do you have your own farm? Are you doing your own extraction? All of these are the aspects of vertical integration that would put together this documentation. Amidst that, you know, the industry, which is dwindling now because as these products are commoditized and the prices are plummeting and the margins are shrinking, you know, the industry is full of brokers, quick opportunistic types who would look for a way to make a buck in order to put two people together. Nothing wrong with that. But there's good ways of doing it and there's bad ways of doing it. But because so few knew about what they should be doing, and because there was no one requiring it, how many companies are going to go out and do what's not required of them? Very few. And so they're not demanding that they see the seed purchase verifications showing that these are either registered seeds or from the proper species and varieties that are allowed. They're not asking for the Department of Agriculture cultivation licenses from these farms, or what the biomass tests look like after harvest to prove less than 0.3% THC compliance. There's a whole slew of documentation. If you're, you know, international, certificates of origin, batch tracking protocols, customs documents, material safety data sheets, all of these things should be accompanying, depending on what your chain is, all these raw materials. And because nobody was asking for it, suppliers didn't feel they needed to put them together. And now we're in a space where I think we see a very clear divergence happening, especially at the precipice of products moving into box stores. They're starting to ask these questions. You know, we've had a lot of conversations with a few of the companies that are consulting these box stores, and they're all being asked to put a plan together to help them identify and validate these different companies. So the market's changing.
Well, and on that topic of validation, another aspect of what we've seen with COAs that's very negative is that they can be manipulated. And it seems like the chain of custody piece is more advantageous because it is a little bit more of a stone tablet. And I see a lot of overlap, and I want you to talk to this because you know a lot more about this than I do, Scott, which is blockchain, which also is something that is supposed to disable the ability to manipulate records. So maybe tell us if there's some overlap between chain of custody, blockchain, or a space for blockchain in the cannabis industry.
Oh, I think it's a massive opportunity. And I think this topic has started to, you know, bleed throughout the industry over the past 2 years specifically. More from the standpoint that, I mean, the two hottest topics in tech right now are cannabis and blockchain. So any company who can put those two terms together and make it a part of their business model is going to be a prospect that they want to propagate out, especially when they're seeking investment and other things like that. But again, what happens when you do that, you end up with another buzzword in the market. And that's what we see a lot, a buzzword. But the potential for it's enormous. And that's exactly what the blockchain is for. You know, a decentralized ledger that's publicly accessible, as long as it, you know, hits the five pillars of blockchain, open source technology, you can view the source code, a public ledger for anybody to identify. It's borderless and it's neutral, meaning decentralized. Everything that we do these days is centralized. And then it's censorship free. So that last one's hard because we don't control the media, right? But that's the goal. But you see companies that are like IBM, for instance, that they have tools that they've introduced to the agricultural industry, like IBM Food Trust. In concept, you look at it and you say, oh, that's something we should incorporate. But truly, it's not really blockchain. It's not decentralized. It's not completely open source. It is biased. And it's a great corporate tool, but it doesn't really serve the needs of a true blockchain solution. But to be able to put something on a ledger and to have that validated on as the hashes, you would call it, through not just, you know, I mean, we don't need to go too far in the blockchain, but, you know, a lot of people have trouble dissociating, well, what's the difference between crypto and blockchain? You know, one's a platform, the other one's a concept for currency. As far as the platform goes, you know, like the Ethereum currency, that's actually designed because it can attach smart contracts. And that's the key right there, smart contracts. When you can take a financial transaction and put documents to it, now you have the ability to put those documents on the ledger. And those become a part of the hash. And if you have every person or every node or participant in the chain of custody putting their piece of the puzzle together, then, as opposed to one person at the end, right? Crap in, crap out. If you have somebody, which most companies are doing now, they're saying, oh, we're blockchain. Well, you just put something on there yourself. We have a cartoon about this. You know, we did a cartoon series. We don't need to go into it, but it was in order to bring levity to the industry for some of these tough topics. And one of the cartoons was a consumer coming up to a cannabis extraction company and them advertising the fact that, you know, our raw materials are now, our COAs are now blockchained. And the consumer says, yeah, but you're the one that forged them. You just blockchain the evidence. So if you don't have your ducks in a row and you don't have everybody participating in that process, from the farmer and the documentation required for harvesting, pre-harvest, post-harvesting, the extracting company, the manufacturer, and then who knows what happened at the end. You can still forge the documents, but document and then create a permanent record of it. So most people are steering away from it. You know, as Bob says, they're just avoiding the topic altogether. But once people open up to the potential for this, I think we're going to see an incredible expansion of businesses getting involved. We started to get involved in this last year in order to take our chain of custody standards that we developed in 2014. And we developed an entire interface and architecture to even open it up to the rest of the industry to handhold different operators through the process to show them exactly what they would need to be compliant and to utilize the blockchain for that purpose.
No, so there's a lot of good stuff in there. As you look at technology, you described in great detail how blockchain, et cetera, can help validate and document the transaction, help provide that ledger record, so forth and so on. Makes me nervous a little bit because it sounds like it might replace lawyers at some point. But that's neither here nor there. Let's talk about technology for the compliance. And what I mean by that is, when we think about compliance in the marijuana side of the industry, we look at a platform that is very specific to state regulations, which are largely esoteric and very detailed, and you know, vary from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. When you think about, and I actually had a conversation with a potential client this morning, a software developer, talking about what are the types of compliance software needs for the hemp side of the industry, for CBD in particular. And, you know, I began to describe, you know, our acronyms of GAP, GMP, API, so forth and so on. But can you help us understand what you would see that sort of one size fits all compliance technology that any hemp producer, CBD producer, should abide by?
Our vision for this is, you have to look at the end goal and work your way backwards. And the end goal should be a level of transparency, and the company, in my opinion, should be able to decide how much transparency they provide to the consumer versus their, that's not so much an option. You have to show your regulators what it is you need to in order to be compliant, but how much you expose about your business is really it's a business, it's a differentiator on how you want to operate. But if we've envisioned it where there's a platform that gives you those options, and so if you can have operator, new business or an existing business, come in and basically input what they do. Are you a farmer? Are you an extractor? Are you a toll processor, a formulator, a manufacturer, a retail distributor? All of these different verticals have compliance requirements on them, whether they realize it or not. And if you can get guided through that process and show, look, these are the checkpoints you need to meet. This is what you need to provide. Upload them to the system. If you were to use the blockchain in this instance, it would open up an era of easeability on regulation that we've never seen before. Meaning right now, the FDA needs to enter your facility in order to do an audit. They do not like computers and electronic documents because they can be forged easily. They love seeing books. They love seeing master batch records, notebooks with multiple colored pens written in them, different handwriting, because it's real. It shows real things happen in real time, over time. If everything was the same color and the same handwriting, it looked like someone put it together last night. They love seeing things like that because they don't trust the internet. However, with the blockchain, if you had the four quadrants, think of it like a Punnett square in genetics. If you have, the four quadrants of blockchain, you basically have private permissionless, public permission, public permissionless. And so what this means is private permission would be internal to a company. It's for them to share internally for the things that they need. Private permissionless would allow regulators to enter the system, look at your documents, make sure that you're up to date and compliant on everything that you need to be for the things you mentioned, your GMP, your audit, your HACCP, your SOPs, and think about that. This would give the FDA a mechanism to to enter a secured environment that they know is uncorruptible, and they would be able to audit your standard operating procedures remotely. That's never existed before. And then if you were to take that, you could create a public permissioned portal for your clients, for business clients, to get access to those compliance documents. And we have use cases where the system we built has saved our customers' businesses, literally, because they were, the people came into their building and they asked them for this information, and everyone in their location, the businesses were shut down except for them because they had it. And then finally, if you really want to go to full transparency as a business to the consumer, you could go to public permission list and you could make this information available to anybody who wanted to see it. And you could see master, not necessarily, it's not so much about manufacturing, but in that instance, it's about what is the chain of custody on the product I'm holding in my hand? What is the legality of the raw materials? Where did, what farm did it come from? You know, where was it extracted? What was the certificates of analysis on the raw materials, not just the finished product, because they're far more concentrated in the raw materials. So there's far more valuable data there. If the industry could have a platform to come together, it would make regulation so much easier from a state perspective, from a federal perspective, and it would be a handheld guidance or protocol that you, that operators could use without having to, as you say, learn it all, reinvent the wheel, or hire someone to come in and walk them through the process. And so, you know, that's what we envision for the space. I think it's very attainable. And we've started that process. Our goal is to hand what we've done and collaborate with other people and hand it off to, and, you know, a third party, a true industry association that's unbiased that can manage this. But, you know, like other people, we're just, we're doing what we can as we can, when we can, in order to put the pieces together in anticipation of these future industry changes, which we do see coming down the pipe. So like others, we want to be ready for it.
Well, Scott, you are absolutely right there and doing incredible work. That being said, I do want to say one thing, because we have a few minutes here. Did you know that CBD can cure bad dating choices? Scott, we would be remiss if we didn't share that you guys have created this website. It's called hadenoughyet.io. It is absolutely hilarious. I encourage everybody to go and check this out. You're kind of poking fun at all the crazy claims out there about CBD and everything else. You mentioned it briefly, but I just wanted to bring it back around here at the end, because I went on there and I couldn't stop laughing. So, but you know, not to bring too much levity to a very you know, excellent subject matter. Your expertise on compliance is undeniable, and we thank you so much for bringing that, sharing that with us here on the Hoban Minute, and can't wait to have you on again, man.
Thanks again, Scott. Appreciate
your time. Thank you for having me. Really appreciate it. Yeah, you guys have a great day.
Take care. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law, and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.